Invocation to Verses 3 talks about this theme, living in harmony with the Absolute Truth. And the consequence of living in harmony and the consequence of living in disharmony, both are talked about over here. So now, the first word, or the invocation, is technically not a part of the Ishopanishad. That is like a standard Vedic mantra. But it has been included by our acharyas because it's a very important mantra. So it is included as the invocation. It is also the it is not that it is not an invocation of the Ishopanishad. It is an invocation mantra, and it can be used at various invocation occasions. And it is also used as an invocation for the Ishopanishad. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I think three acharyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Madhvacharya, and who is the third? Jiva Goswami? I'm not sure. Three acharyas have written commentaries on the Ishopanishad, and His Holiness Bhanu Maharaj has translated their commentaries. So for each verse, he gives these three commentaries. So in their commentaries, the Om Purnam Adha Purnam is not there. Because if you consider the Ishopanishad itself, the Ishopanishad starts from Ishavasyam itself. But the invocation is also conveys a very important truth. So that is also included by Srila Prabhupada. And it is also included by many other publishers also when they publish Ishopanishad. So now that talks about how everything is complete. The material world is complete, we are complete. But that completeness is experienced when we are in harmony. And then the basis of that harmony is, first was described, understanding that everything belongs to the Lord. Isha vastamidam sarvam yatkincha jagatyam jagat tena tektena bhunjitha magrudha kasya svidhanam. So do not encroach upon others. Maintain, accept what is belonging to you. Now, I'll tell this verse and the next verse, and then we'll come back to the purport. So this verse says, the theme is jiji vishe chatam samaha. You can live for hundreds of years. In general, in this world, everybody wants to live long. But if a materialistic person lives for a long time, he is living in ignorance, he is living in sin. That means what is he doing? He's just creating a more miserable future for himself. And the longer he is going to live, the more suffering he is going to create for himself in the future. Similarly, even if somebody does good karma, what is going to happen is, he's going to stay on in the material world to get the reactions to his good karma. But if somebody lives with a Jeevan Mukti, he is working in devotional consciousness, then he is not incurring any karma at all. In the Bhagavad Gita commentary on the 13th chapter, Vishwanathaswami Thakur says that such a soul lives in the body just like the super soul is living. Very beautiful analogy. The super soul, how does he live? Just udasina vadasina. He is completely detached. And he is acting for the benefit of everyone. So similarly, such a pure soul lives detached and he acts for the benefit of everyone. So what the Ishopanishad is saying is, if one can live like this, then a long life is meaningful. Then a long life is worthwhile. Because we are benefiting others by that. So we are doing something worthwhile. Otherwise, we are just creating karmic bondage. That karmic bondage can be good karma or bad karma. Later on in the purport, Prabhupada says that communism, altruism, socialism, nationalism, these are all very attractive forms of karma bandhan. These are what? They are karma bandhan only, but there is some form of karma bandhan where you become poor, poverty stricken, you get disease, that is unattractive. But nationalism, socialism, altruism, these are attractive forms of karma bandhan. When we read the purport, we'll see that. So, if one can live doing a karma, what is that a karma? Kurvan eveha, eveha, like this. Iha means this. What is that iha? As described in the previous verse, ishavasyam yam sarvam. If one can live in this ishavasya consciousness, then one can live for hundreds of years. And one can truly do good to the world. And then it concludes with, evam tvai nanyatho, nanyathetosti, na karma lippate nare. There is no alternative to this. Now what does it mean if there is no alternative? There is obviously an alternative. If I want, I can live sinfully. But it's like saying that, you know, there is no alternative if you want to come down from a 100-story building. There is no alternative except the staircase. There is an alternative. You can just jump off. But what will happen? You will die. And that's not a practical alternative because it will cause you tremendous suffering. It may even cause you death. So in that sense, there is no practical alternative. There is no alternative. And then, after saying this, it clarifies, Isham Chit clarifies next, in the next verse, what happens if you take some other alternative? You try to live in any other way, what happens? Asurya namate loka. Andhena tamasavritaha. Tamste pretyabhigachanti. Yeke chatmahano janaha. Yeah. So can someone read the translation for that? Asurya namate loka.
The killer of the soul, whoever he may be, must enter into the planets known as the worlds of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance.
So, if a person does not live like in Ishavasya consciousness, he is called as the killer of the soul. The soul can never be killed, soul is eternal, that is the basic teaching, avinashi tad viddhi. But killer of the soul means, one kills the spiritual awareness. That is the essence of the soul. So one who lives materialistic, what happens? Andhena tamasavrataha. That is covered by darkness. Tamste pretya bhigachanti. One goes there after pretya, after death. Yeke chatmahano janaha. Asurya namate loka. He goes to the demoniac places. It's interesting. In the Daksha pastime, when first Lord Shiva does not get up or welcome Daksha. Daksha gets very angry. And he curses Lord Shiva. He says that you will not get any sacrificial offerings. And then Shiva's followers, headed by Nandi, they curse the Brahmanas. And the Brahmanas, headed by Bhrigu, get angry and curse the Shaivites. So now, it's very interesting. Generally, when you say curse means, Narada Muni says, you become a tree. He tells this to whom? Alkor Manegri. So here, what are the curses that they give? Here, actually, Nandi says that all of you are just Brahmanas who are doing sacrifices for fruitive results. And you will become materialistic Brahmanas and you will never understand the import of the Vedic literature. And then, Bhrigu curses that you will lose all faith in God and you will become atheistic. That means, materialism and atheism itself is considered a curse. It's not that you have to get some disease and become leper and things like that. It's not that necessarily that is a curse, because that will follow. If you become materialistic, if you become atheistic, then what is going to happen is that you will do bad karma and you'll get the results. But to become materialistic, to become atheistic, that itself is a curse. That's why I'm saying asurya namate loka. If you're born in demoniac loka, asur loka, that itself is a curse, because once you're born in asur loka, you will do asuri karma. So, and then we will automatically have to suffer. In a similar way, to be born in Kali Yuga also is a curse. Kali Yuga is the age of ignorance. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Kali Yuga Pavana Kali Bhaya Nashana Shri Sachinandana Gaahue. By his mercy we can be saved. But if you are born in Kali Yuga, you know, like people born in the West, they never even come to know that there is anything wrong with meat eating. It is natural. So sinful karma becomes natural. So that is the result of being born among demoniac species. To being born in a family or a locality where there is demoniac consciousness. So therefore, if one doesn't live in harmony with God, what is going to happen is that one will go to the demoniac loka. And there one will do bad karma, one will suffer the consequences. Now in this particular verse, you can start reading the translation. We'll go over the purport. Yeah, full purport.
No one wants to die. Everyone wants to live as long as he can drag on. This tendency is visible not only individually but also collectively in the community, society and nation. There is
now
a hard struggle.
I will read this purport and I will ask you questions. He will read the purport. As we read the purport, I will ask you questions. It's very interesting. Sometimes when we read, what happens is, when you read Prabhupada books, You feel, I know this point, I know this point, I know this point. Prabhupada doesn't seem to be saying anything new. But actually, in what is new essentially is the connection. The context and the connection. Just like all music, Satsuru Maharaj gives this beautiful example. He says, all music is basically Saragama Padanisa. But what makes music new is the tune, the combination. Isn't it? It's not that to have new music, you have to create some new syllables or new ragas. Saragama Padanisa itself is enough. But when you combine it in different ways, there are so many entrancing tunes and sounds that come from that. Same way, when we study Prabhupada's books, there are many places where Prabhupada will speak new things also. But often, it is the connection, the context, that helps us to understand deeper meanings. That is what attracts us. So when we are hearing these points, try to think in terms of what is the connection of what we are reading in the purport with the verse. How is what is going on in the purport connected with the verse? So can you read the sentence once again? First sentence.
No one wants to die. Everyone wants to live as long as he can drag on. This tendency is visible not only individually but also collectively in the community, society and nation.
Yes. So what is this related to? Yes. Everybody wants to live eternally. So that's what you can live eternally. You can live hundreds and hundreds of years. So Prabhupada says yes, everybody wants to do that. But how is it worthwhile? Prabhupada will talk about that now.
There is a hard struggle for life by all kinds of living entities. And the Vedas say that this is quite natural. The living being is eternal by nature. But due
Vedas
to
Vedas say this is quite natural. And there is a struggle for existence. So it's like some atheists argue that, you know, you say God has designed this world, but the lion is designed to catch the deer and the deer is designed to run away from the lion. So on whose side is the designer? On whose side is the designer? What is the answer? So you say, so therefore they say actually there is no design. Everything has come by chance only. So isn't it the predator bird is designed to catch the predator animal, predator means that which is eating, that is designed to catch the prey. And the prey is designed to run away. So on whose side is the designer? Equal to all. Yeah, what is the holistic picture then? Nice point. He said that not a holistic picture. The prey also may use it to eat, to get his own food when he has runs fast. So, see, this is evasion of the whole issue. Suppose you make a video game in which you know you have chore police. Your police are running after the thief. Now in the video game, the police are designed in such a way that they can catch the thief. And the thief is designed in such a way that he can run away. But just because both of them are contrarily designed, doesn't mean that the video game has come by chance. Isn't it? Yeah, there is some other purpose for which the video game is made like that. The contrary aspects of the design don't prove that there is no design. Isn't it? There is a further purpose. Same way, what is the purpose? The struggle for existence. When we leave Krishna and come to this material world is a struggle. Mana shashtani indriyani prakriti sthani karshati. So, as a somebody asks this question, first answer is that even if there is this sort of contradiction, that doesn't itself prove the lack of design. There is design required, the video game design. Second point is that, well, what is that purpose? That purpose is that when we forget Krishna and try to enjoy, we are all here on our God project. All of us want to be God. All of us want to be the controller. So the lion wants to be the controller and the deer wants to be the controller. And both of them are equipped in such a way that they have some realm of control. And naturally, if everybody wants to be the controller, then there is going to be conflict. And then whoever is fitter will survive. Survival of the fittest. So there is a higher purpose. So ultimately, Krishna is proving to us that if you all of you try to forget me and try to become God, you cannot be happy. You just simply struggle, and then die. And then again take birth and go on struggling. So there is another purpose there for this sort of thing. But that itself does not prove the lack of a designer. So Prabhupada writes, the struggle is natural. Because why is it natural? All of us are here on the God project. God, all of us want to be God. So naturally there will be conflict. Yes, go ahead. Maybe different devotees can read also a little bit. Amultham. This is quite natural.
The living being is eternal by nature, but due to his bondage...
So now Prabhupada in the first paragraph basically explained how we want to live eternally, but material nature makes us struggle and doesn't allow us to live eternally. Then he talks about where does this longing for eternity come from? That is actually our spiritual nature. Go ahead.
The living being is eternal by nature, but due to his bondage in material existence, he has to change his body over and over. This process is called transmigration of the soul or karma bandhan, bondage by one's work. The living entity has to work for his livelihood because that is the law of material nature. And if he does not act according to his prescribed duties, he transgresses the law of nature and binds himself more and more to the cycle of birth and death in the many species of life.
So now Prabhupada is talking about why we are not able to experience our spiritual nature. Because we are bound by karma. Now Srila Prabhupada will go and start talking about karma, akarma, vikarma. So first point is the longing for eternity, and then why we are not able to be eternal. Then it goes ahead. You can read.
Question?
Yeah, please.
This prescribed duties, what exactly they are like? Many times we talk about prescribed duty, occupational duty or constitutional duty.
That is Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra basically.
Prescribed.
That's prescribed duty.
Then occupational duty?
Generally, those words are used interchangeably, generally speaking. But the occupational duty generally refers to the material swadharma. Material swadharma. That means, say, I have to do a particular duty as a kshatriya or a brahmana. And apart from that, we also have a spiritual swadharma. That we are all souls and we are servants of Krishna. So, generally the occupational... Now, how do we serve Krishna? Under the guidance of the spiritual master. So then the spiritual master will prescribe some duties for us. Now, for all of us as brahmacharis, we don't really have any specific occupational duty. We don't have any occupation. Depending on the need of the organization, depending on the talent of the individual, all of us are prescribed different duties. So in certain situations, it may be different. So Guru Sadhu Shastra prescribe the duties. So they can be used interchangeably. But in specific situations, they might have some different connotations. If you go further, we'll see there is karma, akarma, and vikarma. So we'll explain that further. Is it clear? Any questions? Yeah.
Can you please explain that how, because of the bondage to one's work, one is not able to express the eternal life, to be eternal?
Yeah. See, when we are bound to one's work, that means that we want the results of that work. If I want the result of, if I am a singer and I want the results of my singing, then what happens is I have to identify with my body. Because it is my body, my throat, which is enabling me to sing. And so when I identify with the throat, then what happens, the body and the throat, then that makes me forget. Forget my spiritual identity. Ravindra Swarup writes that sense gratification makes the soul, the soul subordinates himself to the body for the purpose of sense gratification. The soul subordinates himself to the body. That means the soul is higher than the body, but the soul gives up his spiritual awareness, gives his spiritual identity, and he subordinates himself to the body for the pursuit of sense gratification. So, when we want to pursue sense gratification, we who are spiritual beings, who are eternal, we identify ourselves with the body so that we can pursue sense gratification. The soul subordinates himself to the body for the pursuit of sense gratification. That's why as long as we want any material pleasure, we have to identify ourselves with the body, and then we have to, because of that, be deprived of the awareness and the joy of our spiritual nature. Yes, sir? Can go ahead. Okay. Quickly. Okay, so I'm already late, so we will rush through.
Other life forms are all subject to the cycle of birth and death. But when the living entity attains a human life, he gets a chance to get free from the chains of karma. Karma, akarma and vikarma are very clearly described in Bhagavad Gita. Actions that are performed in terms of one's prescribed duties are called karma. Actions that free one from the cycle of birth and death are called akarma. And actions that are performed through the misuse of one's freedom and that direct one to the lower life forms are called vikarma.
Okay. So these are three definitions of karma, akarma and vikarma. So can you repeat once again? Karma?
Actions that are performed in terms of one's prescribed duties as mentioned in the revealed scriptures.
Yes. Are prescribed by whom? Prescribed by the scripture. They are called as karma. So actually when we say all materialistic people, they are all karmis. They are not? They are actually not karmis. They are vikarmis. Yes. There are very few karmis in Kali Yuga actually. Because most people don't follow Shastra. Yes. And next is what?
Akarma. Yeah. Actions that free one from the cycle of birth and death are called akarma.
Yes, free one from the cycle of birth and death. If you see in the fourth chapter, Krishna speaks in very Upanishadic terms, using very enigmatic sort of words. So he says, karmanya karmaya pashyed, akarmani cha karmaya, sabuddhiman manusheshu, sayukta krutsna karma krut. He says, karmanya akarmaya pashyed, one who sees action in inaction, and inaction in action. He is wise among men. So now we understand we are really foolish when we hear this verse. How to see action in inaction and inaction in action. So would anyone like to enlighten us? How to see action in inaction and inaction in action? As you said, tongue twister. You try to speak it loud, fast, you can't speak it. To see action in inaction, inaction in action. Can't even pronounce it properly. It's a tongue twister and a brain twister, both. Yes? Who would like to say how we see action in action and inaction in action? Yes?
First action, it refers to the meaning that it will produce reactions. In the inaction, so-called inaction, which is physical. But because it's not based on the scriptures, it's not without knowledge. And the other is inaction in action means although the person is physically acting, it's inaction because it doesn't produce results. I mean reactions, productive
results. So very good. So when a yogi is meditating silently, he's inactive. But ya karmendriyani sanyamya yasate manasa smaran indriyarthan vimudatma mithyachara sochi. 3.6 Krishna says that actually one who is contemplating on sense objects, although his senses of action are inactive. So that's action in inaction. And on the other hand, a devotee may be working quite dynamically, distributing books, building temples and doing follow-up and whatever else, doing fundraising, but that is inaction in action. So although there is action, there is no karmic reaction to it. In that sense, it is inaction. So akarma does not mean no karma. Akarma means karma that produces no reaction. Karma that only reinstates us in our spiritual nature by which we can go back to the spiritual world. So, go ahead.
And actions that are performed through the misuse of one's freedom and that direct one to the lower life forms are called vikarma.
Yes. Most people are doing vikarma. Go ahead. One characteristic of vikarma is that actually even while doing it, people are miserable. Even while doing, Prabhupada says vikarma means what? Demons struggle, like Prabhupada talks about this in the Bhagavatam, when the Mohini Murti, when that Amrut Manthan is going on. So the Lord Vishnu gives them, the demons, the tail and the devatas the head. And the demons say, why should we get the tail? We want the head. So the Lord says, okay, take the head. And when they start churning, then what happens? All the fire and the smoke and everything starts coming out. And the demons get burnt. So Prabhupada says, this is vikarma. That means what the Lord has told you, you don't do that, you insist on doing it. You get it, you struggle to get the freedom to do what you want to do, and after doing it, you suffer also. So actions which are performed with great difficulty and which also result in suffering, they are called as vikarma. Yes.
These three types of actions, that which frees one from the bondage to karma, is preferred by intelligent man. Ordinary man wish to perform good work in order to be recognized and achieve some higher status of life in this world or in heaven. But more advanced men want to be free altogether from the actions and reactions of work.
Yes.
Intelligent men well know that both good and bad work equally bind one to the material miseries. Consequently, they seek that work which will free them from the reactions of both good and bad work. Such liberating work is described here in the pages of Sri Upanishad.
Yeah. Actually, I think we will not be able to read the whole thing because I would like to complete this verse today. So what I'll do is, I'll quickly go do an overview. So now Prabhupada is saying that how, first of all, how in the lower species we just act according to the body for the struggle for existence. And we just struggle and we die. When we come to the human form of life, then we have an opportunity for eternal life. But it's possible when we reject vikarma and karma and choose a karma. So now Prabhupada explained what is vikarma, akarma and karma. And now, how does one do that akarma? So Prabhupada goes from here to Bhagavad Gita. But Prabhupada has a lot of cross-referencing in this purport. First he talks about Bhagavad Gita, then towards the end he talks even about Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So now 3.9 to 16 in the Bhagavad Gita, which Prabhupada refers to, is actually the section of karma kand. So what Srila Prabhupada is doing in this purport is, now, the first verse talked about the Ishavasya. Ishavasya means God, basically you can say God consciousness. So, now God consciousness can be at different levels. First level is that I'm just materialistic and I don't care for anything. Then gradually I understand, okay, even if I'm materialistic, I have to approach God so that I can get sense gratification. So, this 3.9 to 16 is basically that. 3.9 to 16 has all this Yagyashtashina Santo and Devan Bhavaitane Nate Deva Bhavayantava. How basically you have to perform Yajna to satisfy the Devatas. We satisfy the Devatas by Yajna. Then what will happen is you will get the necessities of life. So at one level is first level, Prabhupada talks about 3.9 to 16 in the Bhagavad Gita. This is like yesterday we discussed pious materialism. This is also, now, this in of itself will not liberate one from the cycle of birth and death. But gradually by doing this, one is becoming elevated. So this purport talks about that. Now Prabhupada writes a nice sentence in the middle of this purport on page 25. This literature, that means the Vedic literature, can regulate the working energy of a human being in such a way that he can gradually realize the authority of the Supreme Being. What is it? Regulate the working energy. You have working energy and you don't have to give it up. But regulate it. Regulate means act according to scripture. And if you do it, what will happen? You can gradually realize the authority of the Supreme Being. Realize the authority of the Lord. So in materialistic consciousness, one doesn't even realize that there is God. That one just thinks that, okay, maybe God is just imagination. Bhaktivedanta Thakur tells that story that somebody saw that the cloud was thundering. He says, you cloud, you are so proud. How dare you thunder? I will spit on you. So what happened when he spits? The spit comes back on him only. So like that, atheists may blaspheme God, but that blasphemy comes back on them only. But gradually, what Prabhupada is saying is interesting, that if you follow the scriptures, if you regulate the working energy, then you will realize the authority. That means first we hear, we accept the authority, we act, and then we realize the authority. Like there is that pastime of Brahmanand Prabhu, who was not offering obeisances to Prabhupada. He said that, I don't feel like doing it. Prabhupada said, offer obeisances, then you'll start feeling like doing it. So actually, when we take darshan, according to the acharyas, the pure devotee, when they see the Lord, they get so ecstatic that they fall down and faint in ecstasy. And for us, even if you don't faint, at least fall down. The fainting will come later. So it's like that. Now, by doing this, by 3.9 is the highest in this. Yagyarthat karmano nyatra lokoyam karma vandhana. Tadatham karma kaunte mukta sangha samachara. So how one will come to that level? By gradually doing yagya for the pleasure of Lord Vishnu. Now Prabhupada, the next purport, the next paragraph, he goes to the highest level. Factually, no one has to do anything more than render devotional service to the Lord. Once one person asked Prabhupada, Swamiji, you know, if everybody became brahmacharya sannyasi, then how will the world go on? So Prabhupada, there will be enough fools like you who will marry. So Prabhupada is very blunt. So actually, we are not here to take care of the world. You know, we have to take care of our own Krishna consciousness, get out of this world. So Krishna will take care of this world. But so no one has to do anything other than render devotional service to the Lord. But in the lower stage of life, we cannot two things we cannot do. One cannot immediately adopt the activities of devotional service, nor can one completely stop fruitive work. You cannot stop fruiting work, you know, everything for Krishna, nothing for yourself. It is too choking for the conditioned soul. How is it possible, you know? Nothing for myself. And what is the use of working? Hey, you know, Krishna is like, karmanne vadigaste ma phaleshu kadachana. This verse is completely opposite of modern consciousness. So people think I have to do karma only for phala. And if I can get the phala without the karma, then it's better also. Isn't it? That means, why do I study? Because I want marks. And if I can get marks without studying, I can get cheat or I can get the paper or something, it's even better. So this idea that you do karma and don't be attached to fruit, it just doesn't enter the modern consciousness. What is the purpose of working then? If you don't, if you are not supposed to get the fruits, what is the purpose of working? The purpose of working is to develop our relationship with Krishna. We are serving Krishna by our prescribed duty. That is the main fruit. And the secondary fruit will come if Krishna wants it. Therefore, what Krishna is saying is, ma phaleshu kadachana. So it's just not possible for a materialistic person to suddenly start this. Like say, when devotees distribute books, people ask him, tumko kitna percentage milta hai? Literally, I don't get any. Really? It's impossible. They just can't believe it. Then what do you get? You must be getting some job satisfaction. They just can't go beyond their realm. You know? Like as well as Radhanand Maharaj says, the problem with the rat race is that even if you win the rat, even you in the rat race, still you remain a rat. That means the consciousness doesn't go out of it, that materialistic framework. So for them, they can't think how somebody can work completely without any fruits. So nor one cannot adopt devotional service completely, nor can one give up fruitive work completely. So now Prabhupada starts talking about slowly elevating oneself. Therefore he says, and okay, whatever you are doing, add God into it. Add God into it. And he starts talking about other bottom of the sentence. These isms, like say, socialism, communism, nationalism, humanitarianism, are certainly very attractive forms of karma bandhan. That means, even if you're a nationalist, faithful nationalist, then you will be born again and again in the same nation, in different species. So, easy journey of the same country. Again and again, life after life after life. That's what will happen. But then Prabhupada says, okay, now there is no harm in becoming a family man or an altruist, a socialist, a communist, a nationalist, or humanitarian, provided that one executes his activities in relationship with Ishavasya, the God-centered conception. That means, okay, whatever you want to do, do it, but add God into it. Add God into it. Understand that this is not my country that I am trying to regulate. This is God's nation and these are God's citizens, God's children. So I have to work for their benefit. And that's why I have to serve God. So the interest, like in karma yoga level, the interest is more in karma than in yoga. That means I am a writer and I will write for Krishna. But you tell me to cook for Krishna, I am not interested. That means Krishna or no Krishna, I want to write. And what is the primary interest? The karma is the interest, yoga is not the interest. So I will write mundane subjects also, I will write this also, Krishna consciousness also. But as one advances, what happens is, when yoga becomes the interest, then okay, if I have to serve Krishna, I will serve in whatever way I want. But Prabhupada is talking about the first level. Okay, you are a nationalist, you are a socialist, you are altruist, whatever you are doing, but add Krishna into it. But then Prabhupada goes further. And he says, okay, even if you add Krishna, why, what will happen by this? Trayate mahato bhaya. That's the next thing in the purport. That if you add Krishna, then you'll be saved from going at least down in the cycle of birth and death. Then the next, this purport, the last sentence, or this paragraph on page 26. A humble God-centered life is more valuable than a colossal hoax of a life dedicated to godless altruism or socialism. Very powerful sentence. Can repeat? A humble God-centered life is more valuable than a colossal hoax of a life dedicated to godless altruism or socialism. That means somebody may live, somebody may be a national leader or a social leader or whatever, but he will not be able to do any good to anyone. Because he's just trying to act according to his own ideas of what is good. And what happens by that is, he only succeeds in making things complicated. The only things like, it is said about Mahatma Gandhi that when he was, before he was assassinated, his own personal secretary said that, you know, he looked like the saddest person you could ever have met. Although he worked very hard, you know, all of his aspirations were frustrated. He wanted a united India, that didn't work. He wanted, he said India lives in the villages. He wanted India to develop according to the agrarian style. And that, Nehru developed India highly industrially. It didn't work. He wanted Hindu, even within India, he wanted Hindu-Muslim harmony. That didn't work. So practically everything that he did, it was a disappointment. Now somebody can argue, you know, no, hum honge kamaya ek din. We'll just keep fighting and one day we'll be successful. Yes, you will be if you harmonize yourself with God. But otherwise it's not possible. So one may do a lot of work. Like I was at one United Nations conference, so they were telling that it was 1945 they established United Nations after the Second World War. So in 2005 I was at this conference. So one of the United Nations main executive was there. So he was telling that in the last 60 years there are scores of sister organizations associated with United Nations. Like say UNESCO is there, UNICEF is there, or so many other organizations are there. So he said that we literally have millions of workers, we have spent billions of dollars, and we have strived to make the world a better place. But it is with great sadness that we have to report at all the 60 fields in which United Nations has been working, in all the 60 fields, the condition has worsened from 1945 to 2005. None of the situations has it improved. Whether it is maritime trade, whether it is aviation, whether it is protection of ecology or whatever, everywhere it is worse. So it's Prabhupada is calling this as a colossal hoax. Colossal hoax. Colossal means big, huge. I get in the Ramayana, and he said, Kumbhakarna is called the colossal demon. Huge demon. So a colossal hoax. You appear to be doing a lot of good work, but actually, no good work is resulting in that. It's like there's a big hospital and there's everything in the hospital. There is a stretcher, there is a bed, there is a everything, but nobody is giving any medicine over there. So then it's a colossal hoax. So the real medicine is God consciousness. So if you don't give that, then a colossal hoax of a life dedicated to godless altruism or socialism. So now what Prabhupada has done is, Prabhupada is addressing different kinds of people. See, I was telling you yesterday that Prabhupada wrote this when India was in the midst of its independence struggle. That's when nationalism, altruism, these sort of things were quite popular. So Prabhupada is addressing that sort of audience and he's saying that, first he's saying that, okay, whatever you want to do, add God into it. And then he's saying, by this you'll be saved from karma bandhan. But now he's slowly coming in that actually, what is more important is not karma, but yoga. And he's slowly starting with that. Even his humble God-centered life. That means, Bhaktivedanta Swami Thakur said that what a pujari does when he rings the bell in Vaidya Aarti, that is more effective than the explosion of a bomb. He says, even if a nuclear bomb, when it explodes, actually people die, but none of them get out of the karma band. They are again reborn. They continue the cycle of birth and death. When a bell is offered to the Lord in devotional service, that actually purifies and helps people to go on the path of liberation. So it's a humble, God-centered life. The simple ringing of a bell in pujari celebration, that is much better than inventing and dropping bombs. It's a colossal hoax of a life. Because that doesn't do any real good. Now, and Prabhupada quotes Nehabhikramanashosti, how what this, whatever work we do, we will get lasting benefit from it. And then Prabhupada concludes the purport by talking about Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, where he says that actually if you do bhakti, then that will teach you pure bhakti and that will actually liberate you from the cycle of birth and death. So first Prabhupada talks about, this is basically one level of karma kanda. You want sense gratification and you do it for, you at least be conscious of God and follow Shastra. But then he talks about karma yoga. For people who are a little more selfless, you are talking about nation, you are talking about society. And then he comes down to bhakti yoga. So in one purport, Prabhupada is giving all these things. One by one by one, he's talking about. So he talks about the struggle for existence, he talks about animal life, he talks about human life, he talks about the different levels of karma, then he goes up and talks about how to come to the level of a karma. First do karma kanda, then do karma yoga, and then come to bhakti yoga. That's why Radha Gopinath Prabhu was telling that it's not only that this material world is om purna madha purna vidam, Prabhupada is a pure devotee is purna, and every purport is also purna. Om purna madha purna vidam purnat purna mudachyate. So Prabhupada gives complete wisdom in practically every one of his purports, which can elevate a person from the lowest level of material existence to pure devotional service if you can practice it. So any questions? Thank you very much. Shri Shopanishad ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki, Itai Gaur Premanande.